This week's podcast is brought to you by Mack Weldon. They make comfortable, high-quality, high-performing underwear, socks, and shirts. They sent me some samples, and they were indeed excellent, except I messed up and got the wrong size at first, and they refunded it, no problem. That's true for anyone. They want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it, and they will still refund you, no questions asked. So for great underwear, socks, and shirts that look good and perform well when working out, going to work, going out on dates, and in everyday life, go to mackweldon.com and get 20% off by using the promo code STORIES.
A science story, huh?
I felt it was that golden moment.
Because science was on my side.
Hi everyone, I'm Ben Lilly, and welcome to the Story Collider, where we bring you true personal stories about science. This week's story is from Brian Kennedy. It was recorded in September 2015 at Union Hall in Brooklyn.
So, when I told my parents that I wanted to major in theater, I watched as the blood immediately drained from their faces. I honestly think I could have told them that I was dropping out of college to become a sex worker or start my own meth lab, and they would have been less concerned, because at least with those jobs, there was the potential to make money. After they recovered from their initial shock, they wanted to know what my backup plan was. You at least need to minor in something, my mother said, like business. Now it was my turn to be appalled. Minor in business? No way. I balanced my checkbook by inserting my debit card into the ATM and waiting to see if an overdrawn receipt spit back out. But to be fair, I could understand my parents' lack of enthusiasm. So far, I had only been in one theatrical production. It was a musical adaptation of an obscure Australian fantasy novel for children. I didn't have any lines in the show, and I wasn't even allowed to sing. Instead, I had been cast as a story theater character, which really is just a nice way of saying you'll be playing the scenery. Dressed all in black, I was a tree, a babbling brook, a shelf that held an evil, poisoned piece of cheese, and in my starring moment, I was a rock. Another actor actually sat on top of me. And I loved every second of it. I knew that I had found my calling. The summer after freshman year of college, I decided to stay on campus and join a summer stock theater program. The program was great, but unfortunately, performing Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap for the residents of my small Midwestern college town didn't exactly put food on the table. I had to find a day job. Now, my friend Kate, who was also in this theater company, had already found employment. She was working at a boutique store called The Secret Attic. The Secret Attic was so secret, no one ever shopped there. The first time I went to visit Kate at work, I walked past the bad display cases of really bad Native American jewelry and found Kate curled up and taking a nap on a giant teddy bear that was twice her size. I knew that I wanted to find an easy summer job like Kate had. Unfortunately, both the dollar store and a fast food restaurant called Taco Oasis turned me down. I applied to work at the town drugstore after that, and they hired me as a pharmacy technician, because apparently I wasn't qualified to serve people chalupas, but handling medication, sure, why not? Now, I was kind of hoping that pharmacy technician was just a fancy job title for cashier. But it was not. My first day of work, I discovered that I was actually expected to fill prescriptions, too. And I don't just mean counting out a few pills. I actually had to take a prescription through the entire process. That meant I had to enter it into the computer, check for drug interactions, bill the claim to the insurance company, make sure they paid for it, and finally, I had to select the right medication to be filled. Now, you would think that I would need some sort of training or previous job experience to have this position. Today, by law, most states do require you to take a test and become certified to work as a pharmacy technician. But back then, all you needed was a can-do attitude and someone who believed in you. The other technician who worked at the store was a middle-aged woman with a no-nonsense attitude. Her name was Faith, and she had zero faith in me. After my first week of work, she announced in front of the entire pharmacy staff that it was pointless. I was never going to be able to learn this job. And I actually agreed with Faith. Science had always been my least favorite subject. I opted out of taking physics in high school, and in college, I was given a very generous B- in biology. I knew absolutely nothing about pharmacology, and I wasn't very curious to learn. In fact, the only thing I did know about drugs was that Advil did very little to help the monstrous hangover my theater friends and I would get after a long night of belting out show tunes in between shots of cheap vodka. But now that pills were my job, I had to learn about them, and the faster I could learn, the better. The pharmacist I worked with was a very patient man, but I could tell he was starting to get annoyed with me, especially when I had to interrupt him every 5 seconds to say things like, excuse me, this woman is asking for her refill on her cream. She says it's for her butt. And I looked in the computer, and I don't see anything called butt cream. Is there, like, a different name for it? You know that scene at the end of Indiana Jones where... Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and Indy is standing in the room full of grails, and he has to pick the right one, otherwise he's going to turn to dust. And that old guy's like, choose, but choose wisely. Well, that's what I felt like every time I had a prescription in my hand, and I was standing in front of our giant shelving units that held like thousands of pills. There was a lot to learn, and because it's not like there's just one pill for depression. If the doctor writes a prescription for a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, or SSRI, my options are Celexa, Lexapro, Paxil, Prozac, and Zoloft. Except those are the brand name medications. And if there's a generic pill available, that's what the insurance company is going to pay for. So now my options are citalopram, escitalopram, paroxetine, fluoxetine, and sertraline. Thank you. And if the doctor writes for fluoxetine, I better make sure that I have the correct formulation and strength. Do they want capsules, tablets, or the oral solution? Delayed or immediate release? 10 milligram, 20 milligram, 40 milligram, 60 milligram. Obviously, there's a lot of room for error. Thankfully, though, whatever work I did had to be double-checked by the pharmacist, because the pharmacist graduated from college and went to pharmacy school for 4 years. I, on the other hand, just spent an entire semester trying but failing to master a New England accent for a production of Our Town. However, sometimes the pharmacy would get really busy and mistakes were made. For example, one time I was filling a prescription for diazepam, which is the generic for Valium. Now, Valium is a controlled substance, and controlled substances are drugs that make you feel good. Drugs that make you feel good are often habit-forming and abused. And for this particular prescription, the patient was indeed abusing his medication. The doctor wanted to wean him off the pills, so he wrote a prescription for the 1 milligram tablets. Except diazepam doesn't come in 1 milligram tablets. When I entered the prescription into the computer, what I should have done is selected the 2 milligram tablets and instructed the patient to break the tablet in half. Instead, I just typed in diazepam 1, and the first thing that popped up was the 10 milligram. I wasn't paying close attention, and that's what I selected. And for whatever reason, the pharmacist did not catch my mistake. It wasn't until a week later, when the pharmacist was triple-checking the prescription, that he finally realized what happened. At that point, we had to call the patient and say, hey, you know those pills we gave you? Do you mind just flushing them down the toilet? To which, of course, the patient was like, oh yeah, I'll totally do that. And then the pharmacist, who was obviously not happy with me, had to call the doctor and explain to him that we had given his Valium-addicted patient a medication that was 10 times the strength of what he prescribed for. Needless to say, there was a number of times where I thought I was going to be fired from that job. And by some small miracle, I never was. And by the end of summer, I actually started to catch on and turned out to be a halfway decent technician. I continued to work at the pharmacy all throughout college. And sometimes my coworkers would say things to me like, you know, after you graduate from college, you should consider going to pharmacy school because you'd make a pretty good pharmacist. But back in my acting classes, no one ever said, hey, when you graduate, you should move to New York and give Broadway a shot. And this was always really frustrating to me because I didn't have any passion for the pharmacy, but I loved the theater. However, in my classes, when we were told to crawl around the floor and act like animals, our instructor would say, "Oh, Brian, were you supposed to be a dying cat?" And I'd say, "No, I was a giraffe." And after a while, I started to wonder if maybe I wasn't as right-brained as I thought I was. Because when it came to burying my soul in the form of a Shakespearean monologue, I often failed. But when it came to reading a pharmacy manual and learning that the ICD-9 code for kidney transplant was V42.0, I had no problem. When I graduated from college, I did not have a minor in anything. I just had my degree in theater. And that theater degree immediately landed me a job, waking up at 5:30 a.m. every morning to go shovel snow in a parking lot of a Brugger's Bagels. I worked at Brugger's for a couple of months until eventually I got sick of coming home and smelling like garlic bagels all day. So I quit Brugger's and immediately applied to work at a pharmacy. With my previous experience, they hired me on the spot. I knew that I didn't want to spend the rest of my life working in a pharmacy, but I was thankful that I could just have that job as a placeholder until I figured something else out. And after working a really crappy minimum wage job, I knew that it was a better placeholder to have. And as much as I hated to admit that my parents were right, it was nice to have a backup plan after all. Thank you.
That was Brian Kennedy. Brian is a writer-storyteller living in New York City. He's written for the Huffington Post and performed improv and sketch comedy at the Upright Citizens Brigade. He tells stories on podcasts and at various venues, including The Moth, where he's a Story Slam winner. A long time ago, he wrote plays and produced them in the Minnesota Fringe Festival. Yes, he grew up in Minnesota. Yes, he still has the accent to prove it. The Story Collider is produced by me, Brian Wecht, Aaron Barker, Ari Daniel, Christine Gentry, Skylar Bayer, and Liz Neely. The podcast is produced by Rose Eveleth. Additional help from Brooke Williams, Lena Groger, and Justin D'Ambrosio. The theme music is by Ghost. Special thanks to Union Hall for hosting the show, and to all the medications I've ever taken for, I think, being right. Thanks for listening.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.